There is a major topic, or topic of major importance to our movement, which is, however, not very much discussed openly within our movement, or is very much discussed outside our movement by those who used to be in it. Very delicate subject. Not a subject that we'd like to discuss with devotees who are newly coming, although at some point they should be made aware of this. Mostly leaders in our movement don't discuss it, but in the spirit of let everyone know what they're getting into, I'd like to discuss some of the topics surrounding the reality, the fact that... come around the front. That within our movement, many devotees who have taken the role of guru have fallen from the strict practice of devotional service, which is very disheartening, which is maybe one reason why, or it can be very disheartening, which is probably why we don't want to discuss it. We want the devotees to be enthusiastic and not lose their enthusiasm. One problem is that devotees, if the thought is it could happen to anyone at any time, so better be prepared in advance. There are many, many questions which arise from this. First of all, how can a guru fall at all? Because a guru is supposed to be... We read descriptions again and again in Shastra of pure devotees. They don't fall down. Guru is expected to be a pure devotee, which leads many devotees to presume that there are probably no pure devotees in our movement. Therefore, no one should give initiation. That has fueled the Ritvik Vad, the idea that Srila Prabhupada actually didn't want anyone to initiate after him. He should be the sole initiator for everyone, for all time to come. There are different versions of Ritvik theory. One is that if a pure devotee actually comes, then he can initiate. In the meantime, Prabhupada should initiate. So all kinds of things come out of that. One thing is that we get those who claim to be pure devotees on the topmost platform by speaking on very high topics, or which Srila Prabhupada, who's the... Everyone within our movement accepts him as a pure devotee. They preach in a different way about Leela and this and that, to apparently to convince others that they are pure devotees and others aren't. And then there are others who say that, yeah, there's Ritvik theory, which we didn't get it from... Those who are proponents of this theory say that actually Prabhupada wanted this. Although Prabhupada certainly didn't say it directly, and no one knew anything about it until several years after Prabhupada passed away, and then some devotees putting together bits and pieces from Prabhupada's conversations, mostly, on the idea that, well, Prabhupada, he couldn't have made these people gurus because Prabhupada would know that they would have fallen down, and therefore he must have wanted this. So it's a theory that's been concocted, ascribed to Srila Prabhupada. Although, if you read all of Prabhupada's books, you never get the idea. And even if you read all his conversations and everything, on which interpretations of various words has come up with the Ritvik theory, but even then you wouldn't get the idea unless you had someone to interpret it for you in that way. And in fact, the Ritvik theory has been thoroughly debunked recently by Rochan Prabhu. But then we're still left with the question, well, what about this and that and the other? And in fact, I've been asked some questions regarding some of the topics that arise from this. So I'm going to address some of them now. My understanding from my reading of Srila Prabhupada's books and his statements, not in his books, is that Srila Prabhupada, within his books, following the example of Shastra, describes gurus as being highly elevated devotees on the topmost platform. That's what you get in Shastra. But practically, he would often quote, Jare deko tare kaha Krishna upadesh amaragya guru hoya taro e desh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying that whoever you meet, instruct them in the science of Krishna. On my order, be a guru and deliver this land. And Srila Prabhupada, when quoting this, he would usually say that someone may say, well, how can I be a guru? I'm not qualified. And Srila Prabhupada would himself answer this question, say that on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, you be a guru by preaching Krishna consciousness. You simply instruct what Krishna stated in Bhagavad Gita, and in this way you be a guru. And Srila Prabhupada himself, in one conversation, we find that he himself raised the topics of guruship in ISKCON after, well, it's not specifically after, but he was talking about himself retiring, and he said, you all be gurus. And he said, little qualification, strictly following. So Srila Prabhupada gave the qualification there in this conversation as being strictly following. In one letter in the 1960s, in the early period of Srila Prabhupada's preaching in the West, he wrote that generally a guru is a liberated soul, but even one who is non-liberated can be a guru if they strictly follow. Now I'm paraphrasing, but it's the same purport. If they're strictly following the instructions of those who are liberated. Srila Prabhupada also writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he writes about the acharya in the true sense of the term who is authorized to deliver Krishna. So he makes a distinction between the great acharyas and others who may be gurus, but not acharya in the higher sense of the term. Now, what has happened within our movement is that, now I'm giving my own perspective, what I perceive to be correct, because it may be very difficult to know exactly who is a pure devotee in every respect. In one respect, everyone who is, again, I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada on this, everyone who is strictly or sincerely trying to be a pure devotee, whose aim is to be a pure devotee, they can be called a pure devotee. On the other hand, we can say a consummate pure devotee, or one who's really attained that position, is one who's completely free from material desires and completely absorbed in love of Krishna. Another example is given of the coconut in an unripe stage and a coconut in a ripe stage. So the unripe coconut is expected, if it's left on the tree, to remain. If it remains on the tree, then gradually it'll become ripe. So it's a ripe coconut in the making, but it's not quite reached that stage yet. But you're confident that it will be, if it simply remains on the tree. So in the same one way, if one remains in pure, in the practice of devotional service, it's expected that one will come to that stage. Now, within our movement, devotees who are later seen to be not free from the tendency to fall down, who actually fell down, were previously considered to be pure devotees, great pure devotees on the topmost level of devotional service. And that was later seen that that probably wasn't true, although even highly advanced devotees can fall, as we see in the case of Bharat Maharaj. Example is given there. It is possible for even highly elevated devotees to fall. We also have the statement from Mahabharat that Srila Prabhupada quotes, Guru api avilipta-sya karya karya ajanataha utpanna pratipanna-sya parityago vidhiyate. Turn this light off, it's not needed. That even if one is a guru, even a guru who is not properly situated, who is not competent to instruct properly, or who's fallen down, should be fully rejected. Now that statement is that was made by Bhishma to his guru, Parashuram, his Vishnu avatar, who was his Astra Shastra guru, his guru in fighting with weapons, but not his Shastra guru. Well, that's also from Shastra, but not guru in the sense that we are talking about, which means Agyanatimirandhasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. One who gives us the transcendental vision. But Srila Prabhupada quoted this in the context of a spiritual guru. Srila Prabhupada quoted, and Jiva Goswami also, Srila Prabhupada quoted Jiva Goswami, who quotes this within his Sandarbhas, that one should reject such a guru in order to accept the proper guru. So, guru api, even if one is a guru, if he's fallen, that means he's not a guru. May have been considered a guru or was a guru. An acharya in the true sense of the term is not going to fall down. someone who's performing the service of an acharya may fall down. Yeah, so one thing I was going to say is that devotees have been considered, because they've taken the role of a guru within our movement, they've been considered, because they have the post, then automatically they must be on the highest level. But that seemed to be a mistake. So what to do? There are various suggestions. What to do? The Ritvik theory is one, not a good idea. Because it's concocted. You have to follow Shastra. You can't just make up some system to get around these difficult. And it doesn't work either, in as much as the idea is that Prabhupada becomes your guru. But then if Prabhupada's your guru, then who's going to train you? Who's going to guide you? When you have questions, just like we'll find, there are contradictions, apparent contradictions within Srila Prabhupada's teachings, just like this one. The guru should be on the topmost platform, but then Prabhupada said that you all initiate. He told that you should all, he told his disciples. Does that mean that Srila Prabhupada didn't know that all his disciples were, he was unaware that they weren't all Mahabhagavats? Does that mean that? What does it mean? That's what we're discussing. So there's one kind of apparent contradiction. There are so many, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Sambhavitasya chakyati marana dati richyati. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And later he speaks that tatamana pamana yoho, one should be a self-realized person. He doesn't care for honor or dishonor. So it's an apparent contradiction. So that's why gurus are needed to explain all these things. And especially what distinguishes a Madhyamadhikari from an Uttamadhikari in the description in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Shastra Yuktye Sunipun. That one who's an Uttamadhikari, he's expert in Shastra Yukti, which Srila Prabhupada translates in Shastric arguments, but it also means Yukti is a word with many meanings, and it also means harmonizing, putting things together, which apparently don't go together. So that's required. And practical guidance. Mostly devotees' questions are not philosophical. Actually, the basic philosophy is quite simple. Unless one's mind is seriously messed up by Mayavad, which is not uncommon, or one has little disposition toward Krishna consciousness due to being total materialist, then the philosophy is not very difficult to understand. People find it difficult to understand because they're envious of Krishna or they're very serious about sense gratification. But otherwise, if people are somewhat sincere, then the basic philosophy is very easy to understand. There's the supreme controller. We are all his servants. We are not the body. We are eternal, spiritual, living beings. We are suffering because we forgot Krishna, and so on. It's not difficult to understand. So you may say, well, just read the books. And that's all. Everything's in Prabhupada's books. But within Prabhupada's books, it's also said that one should accept a guru, that unless one is personally trained by a spiritual master, one cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes that a disciple is just like a child, needs guidance in order to grow up and become adult. So gurus are needed for personal guidance, philosophical guidance, because even though the philosophy, the basic philosophy, is very simple to understand, by the power of Maya we are all very expert at misunderstanding it, and doubts arise. It's a major topic, or a topic that Krishna addresses in Bhagavad Gita. And after speaking, he addresses several times, Asangshayam samagramang yatagyasasi tatshrinu. Now I shall explain to you in such a way that you won't have any more doubts. And at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, are you now free from all doubts? And Arjuna says, yes. So the whole discussion of Bhagavad Gita is to free Arjuna from, well, first of all, there's his overall ignorance, but that's, you could say, his whole position is one of doubting about why he should fight in this situation. And then from that doubt arose so many doubts, but the actual underlying doubt is, or lack of faith is of our position, that I'm supposed to serve Krishna. Instead of Arjuna telling Krishna, Nayotya, I'm not going to fight, he should have said to Krishna, well, it doesn't seem to me right that I should fight, but you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you tell me what's best to do. But if he'd have said that, then there wouldn't have been a Bhagavad Gita. So he was put into Maya, put into doubt, so that Krishna could resolve those doubts. And Maya presents doubts in multi forms. Ravana had only 10 heads, but Maya is Hydra headed, has many, many heads. So she comes in many forms. And however many philosophies or philosophical misconceptions are refuted by acharyas throughout time, there'll always be more. Just like Ritvikism, no one ever heard of it. And someone made it up. It's the modern Western devotees' contribution to the theological hodgepodge of the world. It's a new theory. Actually, it's not that new, because Sikhism had it also. But within Gauriya Vaishnavism, it's a unique contribution. So, you see, it's, Western devotees have come. Actually, the theory was hatched by some devotees in America, and then it was developed by a Gujarati from England. And now that that's been thoroughly refuted, those who are followers of Ritvikvad, they say, well, we don't follow that. They don't say what they follow. They have a whole way of life based on we don't know, and they don't seem to know either, because they don't accept the final order anymore. But what do they accept? We don't know, they don't know, but, well, they could say the same thing about us. That's why I'm discussing this. So, yeah, and gurus are required to explain all these points, which is why some time ago I gave a lecture about how gurus within ISKCON, they should be more like teachers, seen as teachers, more than at the present time. Well, some critics have said they're more like rock stars, because wherever they go, there are lots of people, and it's some, what's that word? Hype. I can't remember, there's some word. Everyone gets excited. So that may be, but I'm not saying that's wrong, that it's nice that Vaishnavas are welcomed happily, but there should be more than that. So I gave a whole lecture. As we see, all the great acharyas, they didn't simply go around, smile at people and initiate people, but they, all of them, wrote books, not, and mostly philosophical, and they regularly instructed their disciples in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So, so that role should be more than anyway. I'm getting a bit away from the subject here. So, some questions were put to me about that, because when in the course of an exchange on the internet, I'd quoted Srila Prabhupada saying, someone had asked, well, what is the qualification to be a guru? And I quoted Srila Prabhupada saying, little qualification, strictly following. So my old friend from Calcutta days, late 1970s, early 1980s, which my good memories of that time, that every night we had just what kirtan we had every night. The Sandhya Arati was just like transportation to the spiritual world. One night I would lead, one night Satvik would lead, one night Madhu Sevata Prabhu would lead, and one night Vamadev would lead. So there are four of us on rotation who would lead the kirtan. And Vamadev, he was from Trinidad, I believe. Huge black guy with a huge belly, and he had the mridanga like this, he was playing like that. He would play, and there was one Uriya milkman. He would come and deliver milk to the temple. Then he'd stay and play the mridanga also. And sometimes Satvik would play the mridanga, sometimes he'd have three mridanga players, and I'd play these, what we call wampas, jaja. And the Calcutta temple is made in such, well, Krishna inspired the architect, it was a British built building, that it's, the acoustics are superb. We never use mics. It's not a very big temple, remember. And of course Radha Govinda, who, there are no deities anywhere who look like them. They have their own unique features of transcendental beauty. So we had ecstatic kirtans every night. So Satvik Prabhu, who is now a Ritvikvadi. I don't hate him for that. I don't know if I'm supposed to, but so he wrote that you state that a guru should be a strict follower. True, yes, certainly, that's true. Certainly, it must be true. Right? It's practically an obvious truth. Without strictly following, one cannot even be a disciple. That's a very good point. It is a prerequisite for initiation. As such, one can say that even though one must be strictly following to be a guru, it is not enough. Oh, that reminds me of a cartoon which Sridhar Maharaj, our godbrother, who's now passed away, he used to keep in his room. It's an ISKCON cartoon in which there's, you can see from the Los Angeles temple from the outside, and there are the words in bubbles. That's how they have them in cartoons. So outside there, it says that, do you agree to follow the four regulative principles? And then there's another bubble saying, yes. Will you chant 16 rounds every day? Yes. And then it takes you inside the temple, and there's initiation ceremony going on. And the devotee says, thank you. You may now take my beads and chant on them and give me a name. You didn't get it. All right. So strictly followed. So is it, one must be strictly fond of a guru, it is not enough. Well, Srila Prabhupada said that. Anyway, let's go on. Then I'll get back to that point. There must be more than that qualification to occupy the post of spiritual master. Please allow me to quote Srila Prabhupada on this subject. Mahabhagavato Sreshto Brahmano Vai Gururin Rinam Sarve Shameva Loka Nam Asau Pujo Yata Harihi. And actually, the whole verse is not quoted, but the point there that Srila Prabhupada wants to make there, the guru must be situated on the topmost platform of devotional service. There are three classes of devotees, and the guru must be accepted from the topmost class. And generally, we will find this throughout Srila Prabhupada's books. The guru must be a topmost devotee. But then again, Srila Prabhupada, practically, he always said, Jare deko tare koha, you be a guru like this. Repeatedly he said he wanted his disciples to initiate. In this conversation which I quoted, he said, little qualification, strictly following. So, how do you resolve this? Well, to me it doesn't seem like a very difficult thing to resolve. That there are guru in acharya in the true sense of the term is Mahabhagavato Sreshto Brahma. It says actually Brahmano, which in the context would generally be understood to mean someone from a Brahmana family, which is also there. In Hari Bhakti, is generally understood. Although, in the next verse, which is quoted, Maha Kula Prasuto Pi Sarva Yageshu Dikshitaha Sahasra Sakkadhaicha Naguru Syada Vaishnavaha. Even if one is born in a very aristocratic family, has been initiated in all kinds of yajnas, he has studied thousands of branches of Shastra, he's not a guru if he's not a Vaishnava. So the main point that's being emphasized in these two verses is that in this verse which follows, which isn't translated in the purport, so written to Dravidian see, is something being missed out, is that one should be a Vaishnava to be a only a Vaishnava can be a guru. So that description is there. And then we also have Srila Prabhupada saying that, well, you should go on and initiate. And then, so how can you initiate if you're not on the topmost level? Well, Srila Prabhupada does say, he does state, but I didn't bring that from the Nectar of Instruction purport, that one can accept a guru on any of the levels, Uttamadhikari, Madhyamadhikari, or Kanishadhikari. But Srila Prabhupada says one cannot advance very satisfactorily, is that the word? Can you remember? If under the insufficient guidance, he says, of a Madhyamadhikari or a Kanishadhikari. Now, actually, it's mostly Madhyamadhikaris. I should get that quote. I have to find that. I can't remember where it is. I believe that's from the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That it's mostly Madhyamadhikaris are initiating gurus. Because Uttamadhikaris, they're lost to the world. Vanshi Das Babaji, Gorkishor Das Babaji. Gorkishor, he doesn't even want to talk to anyone unless they're a pure devotee. That's what Shastra says, right? For your own bhajan, you just don't mix with others, that's all. And Gorkishor, just anyone comes to him, so you be a pure devotee immediately, otherwise just get out of here. That was his attitude, like that. that Maharaj Nandi came to him, begging him, please come to my palace, come and purify my home, I want your association. And Gorky Shaw said, well, if I go to your home, I might get bewildered and want to occupy it, and then it'd be a problem for you. But as you want my association, you just stay here. Don't go home. You stay with me. That was the way Gorky Shaw used to. That was, you be a pure devotee, that's all. There was no process to raise anyone. So he had one disciple. He's the only... There are others who thought they were his disciples, but he didn't accept them. They just kind of hung around him, but he didn't accept them. They tried to come to his level, but they couldn't, and they fell down. They some of them might have been sincere, but they fell down because you can't artificially come to that level. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made the system by which they could gradually come to that level by acting on, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that by acting on the Madhyama platform, where one sees, Uttamadhikari says, his vision is Sarva Bhuteshu Yapasyat Bhagavat Bhavamatmanaha Bhutani Bhagavatyatmani Esha Bhagavatottamaha. One who sees that all living beings are servants of Krishna. He sees the Lord is present in everyone. He's the topmost devotee. Then who are we going to preach to? You see, everyone's a devotee. But a Madhyamadhikari's vision is Ishware Tadadhineshu Balisheshu Drisatsucha Prema Maitri Kripo Peksha Yakaroti Samadhyama. One who sees this, who sees there's the Supreme Lord and offers his love to him. There are devotees and makes friendship with them. There are the innocent non-devotees and he's merciful to them. And there are the rascal non-devotees, the envious, and he avoids them. So there's Madhyamadhikari. And Archaryam eva haraye pujasya shadheyate natad bhakteshu bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smita. And a prakrita, a materialistic or neophyte devotee who's, is one who sees there's God and there's me, and that's it. I'm a devotee, and everyone else, forget it. That's different to Gorky Shaw's vision, mind you, who was on the platform of bhajan. Bhajanananda. He only wants to do bhajan. He doesn't want to mix up with others. So Madhyamadhikari preaches. So generally Madhyamadhikaris are initiators. Srila Prabhupada, in this quotation where he says that one should accept, one should accept an Uddhamadhikari. One, as a guru, one may also accept a Madhyamadhikari or a Kanishtadhikari, but one cannot progress satisfactorily under that insufficient guidance. But then in that context he defines as an Uttamadhikari as one who chants 16 rounds, follows the four regulative principles, strictly engages in devotional service and is always thinking how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Who's a preacher. So, strictly following. Strictly following. Even the newcomer to be initiated has to be strictly following. But obviously there's a difference between a strict follower with experience in devotional service and a newcomer. Another point about strictly following, although Srila Prabhupada doesn't state it exactly, generally when we think of strictly following, we think of following the four regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, getting up in the morning, going to Mangalarti. But another essential point in strictly following is to strictly follow the Siddhanta, the philosophy that's given. Because if you don't strictly follow that, and you present something a little different, then your function of teaching is misleading. There are two ways in which a guru teaches, by practice and by precept. That is an English saying, but that's, we have that also, that from Chaitanya Charitamrita, acha kare ke ho na kare pracha pracha kare ke ho na kare acha. Acha pracha name karo dui karj tumi sarva guru tumi jagate arj. Some follow the principles of devotional service strictly, but they don't preach. Others preach, but they don't set much of an example in following. But Haridas Thakur is described here by Sanatana Goswami as one who both follows and preaches, and therefore he's Sarva Guru. He's the Guru of the whole, Jagat Guru, the best person in the world. So, practically we see that those who don't strictly follow the philosophical principles, they cause in many ways more damage than those who don't strictly follow the regulative principles. Because if you don't follow the regulative principles, it's obvious to everyone that you're in Maya. But if you don't follow the philosophy properly, or just change it a little bit, then it's not going to be apparent to everyone. Because you're supposed to learn from a guru, and if he teaches you wrongly, then you're in trouble. Now, within ISKCON in India, and maybe in other places also, but especially in India. Let me backtrack a bit first. Indian culture, is Hindu culture, is conducive for devotional service. So we find many people from Indian backgrounds taking to Krishna consciousness, to Prabhupada's movement. Because the cultural background is such that they can easily take to it. And one of the factors within that Hindu culture is acceptance of a guru. So within Indian culture, people don't have difficulty in the principle of accepting a guru, unless they met some of Madhu Pandit's people. But even then, they think people are initiated in his cult, many of them, they think he's the guru. You ask that one, they say, oh, I'm also a member of this. Oh, who's your guru? Madhu Pandit. You meet people, they say like that. So, but at the same time, it can be a disadvantage if we understand what it means to be a disciple and a guru according to the general Hindu understanding, which is very shallow. The idea you get a guru, he smiles at you, blesses you, and you give him some money and feed him, and that's it. The idea that you have to learn, you have to change your life, your whole way. You have to learn inside. Whatever you knew previously, forget it. And you have to relearn. Even if you come from a Vaishnava family, you may have such an advantage, but still, exactly what it means to perform pure devotional service, you have to be trained in that. So it's a very dangerous position for our movement if we accept guruship and discipleship on the general Hindu platform, something like Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, Asaram Bapu, or something like that, where it's just Gurudev Ki Jai Ho, lots of people, and that's it. Of course, within our movement there will be more, because there are Prabhupada's books, but then the gurus have to have their disciple read the books and follow the books and train them to understand what's in the books. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, to me it just seems like it's a very obvious and clear thing that guru in our movement means to follow what Srila Prabhupada said and teach that to others. It's not such a difficult thing that we have to make all kind of mental somersaults. It's a very simple thing. But then if we don't very thoroughly do that, as Srila Prabhupada thoroughly taught his disciples, he would speak philosophy and train them, then what are we left with? We're left with a better version of Asuram Bapu. So you're probably here in South India, you've never heard of Asuram Bapu. That's your good fortune. If you go to North India, especially Gujarat, is he over there in Allahabad also? All North India. So, or if you read the newspapers with his murder cases and all this kind of thing, then it's not only in ISKCON. He had murders in his ashram also. So you'd have heard of him. And down here they have Amma. She's also internationally famous for hugging people. And even when she was in London, 20,000 people. She's got a lot of stamina. Hugging 20,000 people. She's got a big fat body, so it's a very comfortable hug, I guess. If I was to hug someone, it'd be a little bony hug. So, yeah, it's... Now, that may be an overly cynical analysis, but I suspect there is some truth in that also. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said it. So, strictly following, we see in our movement that the strictness has come down. My understanding is that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to become more strict. And not just my understanding, in that famous conversation, one of the famous conversations that Srila Prabhupada said, he said that about the GBC, he said, for now, we have been, again I'm paraphrasing, we've been liberal for the sake of working. That means for getting things going, just like in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada, he practically didn't introduce very few rules and regulations. The first deity worship in ISKCON was in the temple, was in San Francisco, Jagannath, Subhadra and Baladev. There was no Mangalarti as such, devotees didn't get up early in the morning, not very early, 7 o'clock, something like that. Jagannath, Subhadra and Baladev were never dressed, they didn't have any clothes, and there would be one lamp on a plate, and everyone would offer it like that, and that was the deity worship. So gradually Srila Prabhupada introduced more rules and regulations. Often devotees quote things that Srila Prabhupada said in the 1960s as if that should be the standard. But clearly Srila Prabhupada introduced more rules and regulations as he went along. He said, so far we've been doing like this for working, Srila Prabhupada said, but now we should be very strict. So my understanding is that we should, at least the core members of ISKCON, that means there may be a big congregation, but those who are living in the temples, especially, they're supposed to be brahmanas and setting a first-class standard, so we should be very strict. But unfortunately, in many areas, we've become less strict, including deity worship, in many cases. So then we can expect problems. If there is strict following, then there won't be fall down. As Jayadvaita Swami said, that's a very quotable quote, when... What was the question put to him about you saying you should be very strict? Oh yeah, it was put to him that he was being too strict, and he said, "Well, how many devotees have you seen falling down from being too strict?" He was especially talking about sannyasis. How many sannyasis have you seen falling down from being too strict? It's when they're not strict, that's when the problems come. So So there is such a thing as niyama agraha, being overly enthusiastic for rules. But generally we're saying that the fall downs don't come because of that. They're coming because of neglect of rules. So Srila Prabhupada said the GBC should be very... So to me, it seems that it shouldn't be such a problem, that devotees should go on initiating, and they should be ideal followers. And if there are complaints that... Well, actually, there shouldn't be any complaints, because especially... Just like you'll see any traditional sannyasis here in India, even Mayavadis, they don't go here and there by themselves. They're always accompanied by others, brahmachari, especially brahmachari. So if a sannyasis always has at least one, if not more, brahmacharis, or obviously male devotees with him, then where's the opportunity to get into Maya? Unless the brahmacharis with him also get into Maya, but they should tell him, Maharaj, come on, you shouldn't go to the movies. Or whatever, if he exhibits such tendencies. So, if a sannyasi has with him serious devotees in attendance, then he's not going to have an opportunity to get into Maya. Right? And even if there is some tendency like that, and it's seen, then when there's a report, that should be taken very seriously. If it's reported that so-and-so Swami is doing something which doesn't look too good, then that should be taken very seriously by the GBC members. And that should be dealt with. I mean, he shouldn't be allowed to go on year after year after year until eventually the worst happens. And you get one of those letters, well, I love you, but sorry, I can't carry on, something like that. That shouldn't happen. So, yeah, still going on and on. Anyway, I'll be right out of time. So the question is asked here by Satvik Prabhu. Were the ISKCON authorized gurus strictly following when they were giving initiation? He's talking, I guess, about the ones who have fallen down. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. That should be seen. Strict followers should be initiating. Someone himself is not strictly following the principles or Siddhanta, they should not initiate. Again, training should be given to the prospective disciples, so that they don't rush into some kind of Hindu-style initiation where Ashram Bapa comes to town and initiates a bunch of people, and there's the joy, I got initiated, but they don't know who he is, what his philosophy is, if he has. Well, he has some horrible philosophy, not much, but whatever it is, it's not good. And there's nothing to follow. They just feel, oh, now I got a guru, and that's it. But what is their commitment? What are the standards expected of him? They're not trained to follow that. They're just, come on, get initiated. So the disciples, or those who would be disciples, they're also supposed to have some preliminary training so that they can understand what are the symptoms of a bona fide guru. All this training should be there so that they don't just rush in or get pushed into being initiated by someone who's not strictly following. Which also, I'm saying strictly following also means following the Siddhanta. So that means that also presumably the GBC should say what is the Siddhanta on various issues. Which is a which is quite a task. I said that Krishna consciousness is basically very simple, but then there are issues which arise, subtle issues, fine issues. And then the question, after they fall down, what happens to their disciples? Well, before I go, yeah, let me say some more about that. Shouldn't happen that they do fall down. And actually, although it used to be common within our movement that sannyasis fell down, it has now become much less, because there is now much more stringent screening of candidates for sannyas. So that's a fact. But at the same time, we can't expect that there won't be any more guru fall downs, even of those who've been stringently screened. Because it's a war against Maya, and there's no magic wand to convert a conditioned soul into a pure devotee. The magic wand is the process of devotional service. That may be, and that's also expected in Shastra, which is why Shastra gives indications that, or states that, what to do when one guru's, if a guru falls down. And again, says one should accept a devotee on the topmost level. But devotees on the level of Srila Prabhupada, they don't commonly appear in this world. It's not that such highly exalted devotees are just available everywhere at any time. So the question, what happens to the disciples? Was their initiation in the bona fide? That's a difficult question, isn't it? The initiation was bona fide. They were initiated into a bona fide sampradaya by someone who was following. Was their initiation bona fide? I would say that if Krishna accepts it, if the disciple is serious and Krishna accepts it, then that's certainly bona fide. We have to understand that diksha is not just a matter of sitting in a ceremony. The ceremony is also important. The formal commitment is also important. But diksha means the commitment to surrender one's life to Krishna. Diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. At the time of initiation, one surrenders oneself to Guru and Krishna. So there are two aspects to diksha. There's the ceremony and there is the commitment. So if the devotee is serious to surrender to Krishna, Krishna will accept that. But Krishna has also made the system that one has to approach Krishna through a guru. So in the past, ISKCON stipulated that there should be reinitiation. And some devotees have been reinitiated several times, which makes the whole thing seem farcical. So should we stipulate that people get reinitiated? I say no, because it's a matter of faith. You may be reinitiated, but if your faith is not there due to being broken, then you can formally take or officially take initiation, but if the faith's not there, the guru-disciple relationship, which is based on intimate faith, won't take place. It won't actually happen. So then some devotees, they recommended, well, your guru fell down, so you should just take shelter of Prabhupada. And they say, well, why not take shelter of Prabhupada just anyway? But I would say, all right, take shelter of Prabhupada, but also you may not want to be reinitiated. That may not be necessary, but it's good also to take guidance of senior devotees and be under the guidance of someone, even if you don't formally get reinitiated. There are some devotees, I know some, I don't know if they're still alive in this world, who were initiated by Ananta Vasudev. There are many devotees after the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who were initiated by Ananta Vasudev, who later it was seen that he was not strictly in the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's a very controversial topic. But many of his followers, his disciples, they continued to follow him in his revamped version of Krishna consciousness. And many didn't. They took shelter of other gurus in ISKCON, in the Gaudiya Math diaspora. But I don't know of any who were reinitiated. And if you ask them who they're initiated by, you don't ask that, but usually you'd ask others, or they'd be known as disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. In the case of Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, he was given Harinam by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Diksha, what is called Diksha, it's technically that is Diksha when one is given mantra, initially, not Harinam. So that was given by Ananta Vasudev, but he always presented, I'm a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, although, and Prabhupada accepted him as a godbrother, although other of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers said, no, he's not. He didn't take initiation from Prabhupada like that. So it depends much on the faith of the individual, and I take it case by case. And I also say there are some devotees in our movement who are initiating, but then they had difficulty in devotional service. They never went away from devotional service, and they didn't have any major falter. I mean, really serious, gross, horrendous falter. And the GBC said that their disciples should be reinitiated, which I didn't agree with at all. That's Sahodra Swami and Prithu. Why? They never ceased to be fully dedicated servants of Srila Prabhupada. Maybe you could say that their disciples should take guidance from others, but they're not avaishnavas. They didn't become non-devotees. So why should they be reinitiated in that case? Now, there was one devotee who was initiated by Prithu Prabhu. He had Harinam, and I gave him Brahminical initiation. And there's another who had both Harinam and Diksha, the Brahmin initiation from Prithu Prabhu. And he kept on asking me, you give me again. And I said, no need. So eventually he said, it would really help me, and I'm worshipping the deities. And I corresponded with Prithu Prabhu and said, this is the situation. And then I just gave him, I took his beads, gave them back to him, and I told him the mantras again. That's all. Because he felt he needed it. And others also, they feel that they need that connection. So I have done in some cases. And often we see those who themselves are looking for that kind of connection, although it could be by shiksha alone. But either way, by diksha or by shiksha, if one is under the guidance of a devotee, then that is better. Although, you see, it can become quite intricate. I'm saying Krishna consciousness philosophy is simple, but there are intricacies also when you get more deeply into it. Although it is practically seen in many cases that the disciples may be in many ways stronger or more Krishna conscious than the gurus. And if it must be a fact that every time, in every generation, the disciples must be less than the guru, then the whole sampradaya is going to hell, because it's just going down all the time. So of course, Hare Krishna. Of course, the disciples should, Hare Krishna, the disciples should always think that I'm completely dependent on my guru, but at the same time, we hope that the disciples will take up the mission and themselves become strong and preach Krishna consciousness and do better than the guru. They'll never think, I'll do better. But Srila Prabhupada said, you say, I'm an old man, you're a young man, you can do more than me, you have more time, do more. So, but there is that. But at the same time, if one thinks, now I've become more than my guru, then you're finished. Krishna doesn't like that. So are such devotees whose gurus fell down and they take shelter of Srila Prabhupada, are they disciples of Srila Prabhupada? Yes. And everyone who is initiated by disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they're also disciples of Srila Prabhupada. We're all disciples of all the previous acharyas. And that should be made known also. As I've said, that the gurus in ISKCON should make it clear to their disciples that I am a guru, my qualification is that I'm representing Srila Prabhupada. That is the qualification. It's not that I was born in a very high Vaishnava family, which is not true in most cases anyway, or that whatever it is, not that I learned so many shlokas, or no. The only qualification is for any guru, including Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he would also say the same thing, is that you represent your guru and your acharya. And there may be differences also in presentation. Gaurakishore is very different to Bhaktivinoda. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is very different to Bhaktivinoda and Gaurakishore. Prabhupada, in many ways, was different to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, these are all highly elevated devotees, but following after Srila Prabhupada, the guru should present that what Srila Prabhupada has presented, I'm presenting that to you. And they should be able to, the devotees who are coming as their disciples, they should tangibly experience that when they read Srila Prabhupada's books and when they hear from their guru, it's the same thing. There's a very nice lecture of Srila Prabhupada in which he says that what Madhva said of Vyas, same thing. And he goes through a whole same thing, same thing, same thing. So we're presenting the same thing. So you should, when you read the books of Srila Prabhupada and you hear from any devotee who's supposed to be representing Srila Prabhupada, you should understand how it's the same. If you feel it's different, then probably there's something wrong. Several devotees said to me after reading Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav how it really helped them to appreciate how Srila Prabhupada was saying the same thing as his guru, which which is what he always said. And I'm saying the same thing as my guru, but when you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said this, and Prabhupada said the same thing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it in a very, often in a very complex and deeply nuanced way, and Srila Prabhupada said it in a very simple, straightforward way. It's the same thing. Did you expect anything else? Srila Prabhupada said, my only qualification is that I'm following my Guru Maharaj. So, yes, we're all followers, we're all disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Who is taking the responsibility to take such unfortunate souls back home, back to Godhead? Ultimately, it's Krishna, as we sing every morning. Sangsara dava nalaliudha loka charnaya karanya ghana ghanadvam praptasya kalyana gunarana vasya vandegaroshi charnaravindam. Guru is worshipped as being like a cloud. The cloud gathers water from the ocean and sprinkles it on the land. So in the same way the Guru takes mercy or benefit, kalyana guna. Krishna is an ocean of transcendental, auspicious qualities. And the Guru takes, like a cloud, takes water and sprinkles it everywhere. Ultimately, it's Krishna's mercy that manifests through the person of a Guru. That's why we say that we see the Supreme Personality of Godhead present before us as the Guru. That doesn't mean that the Guru is Krishna, but he manifests Krishna's mercy. That's the meaning of his divine grace. Grace means mercy. So the Guru manifests that. He becomes... you may say, well, how can you do that if you're not a topmost devotee? Well, you do it to the extent that you do it. To the extent that you represent Krishna, to that extent you represent Krishna. Sorry for the tautology, I believe the word is. If you tell someone that, well, according to Shastra, according to Srila Prabhupada, according to the tradition, Guru Sadhu Shastra, you should rise early every morning, chant the holy names, then you're representing Krishna. And one who follows, he gets the mercy of Krishna by doing so. When we talk about the mercy of the Guru, I often think we have the idea of like this magic wand Guru, or what's that called? Shaktipat. You touch, and the disciple gets an electric shock. But the method of imparting Krishna consciousness is by instructing Shastra. So the disciple who has heard properly, he repeats the same thing. And this way the parampara goes on. There's a lot of talk about topmost devotee and is he seeing Krishna in his pastimes, but that may or may not be. If he is, very good. But to instruct the message of Shastra and how you should follow and correct you if you're doing wrong, this is the duty of the Guru. Madhyamadhikara. He should do that. So this is how Krishna's mercy comes. And how do you get delivered? Ultimately it's by Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada often described that if the pure devotee recommends someone to Krishna, then Krishna feels obliged. All right, he has to deliver them. But ultimately it's Krishna who does that. And we sing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang about the pure devotees. Krishna Shri Toma, Krishna Dite Paro, Tomara Shakoti Acha. The pure devotees have the power to give Krishna. So those who are giving Krishna in the form of Krishna Upadesh, which is none different from Krishna's instructions, they're also giving Krishna. And the topmost devotees like Srila Prabhupada, they give Krishna in the same way, by giving instructions. Srila Prabhupada didn't come to the West and go around touching people and giving them electric shocks. But he asked people to come and listen. And they had to voluntarily listen and follow his instructions, and then they could be benefited. Then they could get the mercy. This is the science of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada taught us. So ultimately it's Krishna that delivers. The gurus, they deliver Krishna to the extent that they have Krishna. And if Srila Prabhupada tells that you go and preach, you initiate, then by Prabhupada's mercy, then Krishna is also delivered by that process. Now the question. We sing daily the Guravashtaka to glorify our spiritual master, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's prayers are describing a highly elevated Mahabhagavat, one who is in direct relationship with Radha Madhava and who is assisting the gopis. The English translation says that he, Vishwanath Chakravarti, offers his humble obeisances to the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The word such creates a distinction. My next two questions. Who are we singing this prayer to every morning in ISKCON? Well, whoever fits the description. Srila Prabhupada described, I looked for the quote but I couldn't find it, but it's there, that this description is not of every spiritual master. And I presume that is so because not every guru is, this is a manjari in, a gopi in Krishna Leela. Pure devotees, they're not all gopis. They can be gopas, they can be Dwaraka Vasis, Ayodhya Vasis. So this prayer by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who, he doesn't specify who he sings it to. In the Parampara song of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he doesn't include the name of Vishwanath Chakravarti's Diksha Guru. Many questions if we get into Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is he singing to when he says Gurudev, Kripa, Bindudev? So many songs he sings to his Guru. Gurudev, Kobe, Toma, Karuna, Prakashe, so many songs. So that is addressed to a Guru who is actually Nikunja Yuno Rati Keli Siddhai Ya Yali Bhe Yukti Rapikshane Tatrati Daksha Dati Vallabhasya Vande Guru Sri Charana, who is on the platform of assisting Radha Krishna in their amorous love sports with the gopis, he's very expert in doing so and is extremely dear to Krishna. So that is directed to such a guru. Srila Prabhupada had us sing this every morning, and naturally we all, when Srila Prabhupada says, sung that to Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada himself wrote that not every guru, this prayer is not to every guru, because not every guru is a gopi in their siddha swarup. And of course it's a controversial question, but there is some scholarship, you can say, that's been done presenting that Srila Prabhupada was manifesting more of the sakharas of the boyhood, cowherd boys. So maybe those verses, well, I'm really going to get shot for saying this, maybe those verses don't apply to Srila Prabhupada, although those particular two verses. Well, Sri Radhika Madhavayora Para. Madhurya Lila Gunarupa Namna Pratikshana Asma. That could also be Gopa, but mostly, yeah. But the Nikunja Yuno Rati Keli Siddhyai, that's very clearly gopis only. But other verses can apply to various gurus at various levels. So you can sing that to, as much as you see that in your guru, you can sing it to them, and you can sing to Srila Prabhupada. When I was asked about this, I said to my disciples, I said, you can sing this to Srila Prabhupada, and as much as you see those qualities manifested in your guru, you can sing that to them also. Because after all, and this is a major point, that those who are guru-vadis, as opposed to ritvik-vadis, they emphasize, is that faith in guru is an essential platform in Krishna consciousness. It's not just a ritualistic ceremony that one gets initiated. One is supposed to offer one's life to Krishna via the guru, which is why it's also the most abusable post in the world. It's more than a military dictator. Military dictator can control people's lives by force, but he doesn't win their heart. But the guru, sarvat atma pano guru, one is supposed to give one's whole being to the guru. One is it's not that you follow just by force, but voluntarily. That is required for the sat shishya. That verse I quoted yesterday. Etadeva hi sat shishyaya kartavyam guru nishkritam. And what's the next line? Nishkritam. And I can't remember the third line, and the fourth line is still trying to remember the third line. Sarvat atma pano guru. Still trying to remember. Can't get it. So anyway, this certainly is the duty of the bona fide disciple. Still trying to get it. If I get it, it's good, because it's... But it means in all respects, whatever it is. I can't remember. Vishuddha bhavena. Vishuddha bhavena. With impure consciousness, he should offer everything that he has, feeling himself fully indebted to the Guru. Savai vishuddha bhavena. In pure consciousness. So one is asked to place one's full faith and full trust, and there's no shastric injunction that, well, if your guru's not Mahabhagavat, that you don't fully trust him. There's no such description. So what do you do here? Well, the real solution to all these problems is that we have actual pure devotees, but then not everyone may be able to recognize them. What I've seen is that now I'm talking here. Well, especially in relation to Gauriamat, because I've had quite some exposure to Gauriamat over the years. In my research on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and traveling in Bengal, often meeting devotees, staying in their mutts, meeting, discussing, befriending. You're not supposed to do that, according to official ISKCON. That devotees accept their guru, but at the same time, there's in many cases there's an unspoken, an unspeakable understanding. If there's something which is not exactly as you might hope it would be. For instance, this is actually something very... Well, this is not a good instance at all. Well, there's one, I'll give one instance. Is that one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, who is a very dedicated preacher, many disciples, as he got older especially, he would often get very angry over small things and like say the most heavy things, I mean just really extremely heavy things for something very, very small. His disciples weren't bothered in the slightest. They didn't take notice at all. Because they knew he's always like that. You know? So they didn't complain, but they also didn't take him very seriously. And he didn't even seem to notice that they didn't take it very seriously. So that's one instance. Another instance I saw, one of the devotees actually, guru of many devotees, and he was senile. He was, the other one I was talking about wasn't actually senile, but highly irascible is the word. Irascible means tendency to become angry. So he was actually senile. And so his disciples were looking after him, but I wasn't happy at all that I saw one of his disciples was actually chastising him. He was just senile. He didn't know what was going on. Why are you making such a mess? He was drooling. And so that was not a very good attitude on the part of the disciple. So, but they wouldn't. In such a case, the disciples, they don't. You know, they don't reject their guru, they don't say he's a conditioned soul, but it's an unspoken understanding. So that's, but the gurus I'm talking about, they spoke Krishna conscious philosophy and they didn't act outside the scope of Krishna consciousness. There's a very great danger which we've seen in our movement several times in which a guru actually deviates from the teachings and or the practice. And then the disciples think it's all a leela. That's nonsense. One should be spiritually awake enough to know the difference. So these are some very fine points of culture also to be understood. Quotation from a conversation with Srila Prabhupada, Bhavananda. There will be men I know who want to try and pose themselves as gurus. Tamal Krishna. That was going on many years ago. Your godbrothers were thinking like that. Bhavananda, ready to jump. Prabhupada, very strong management required and vigilant observation. So the next question is from Sattvic Prabhu. Bhavananda is telling Srila Prabhupada that there will be men who want to try and pose themselves as guru. Which kind of guru was he talking about? Well, my answer to that is from the context, the conversation is about outsiders like Gauriamat men posing themselves as gurus to take over ISKCON. So Prabhupada said that vigilant management is required that that doesn't take place, which did take place and... But it may be within our movement also. Someone poses that, you know, I'm the greatest guru, I'm the real guru. That may be. Someone wants to promote themselves as the best or are immature disciples or neophyte disciples. They want to promote, my guru is the best. You have to get initiated by my guru. He's the best. But rather we should see that the guru is someone who's serving Prabhupada, and those who, to the extent that they do follow and serve Srila Prabhupada, they're qualified as guru, that's all. And it may be even that you have a guru with many, many disciples, but it may be someone who has less disciples is can train you better because he has more time for you. Although one who has many disciples may have trained his disciples to train you also. But it should be that the training is more or less the same. There shouldn't be any great differences. And in one sense, it shouldn't matter within ISKCON who you take initiation from, as long as they're all strictly following Srila Prabhupada, the results should be the same. There's an axiom, two different things which are both equal to another thing, they're equal to each other. I can't remember the exact wording. What to do? Qualified or unqualified? I'm not qualified to the higher standard, but I'm teaching as Srila Prabhupada taught. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a fourth canto purport that it's an emergency situation, therefore we have to create brahmanas from the ranks of the unqualified. Normally brahmanas would be born from a brahmana father and trained like that. That's the normal system which we find described in Shastra. But there's an emergency. Where are the brahmanas? Chittahari was born in a brahmana family. Now he's a real brahmana. They didn't learn anything about brahminical culture, being born in a brahmin family. Here's another one, Madhukanta. Brahmin family. Yourself? Brahmin family. What about you? It's a joke. If we ask you, it's a joke. But there may be so many brahmanas wandering outside there. Who's a brahmana? Gokul Chandra or them? The guy's going to the communist rally on the ground where we just had our festival. Are they here? Who are the brahmanas here? Nambudris, is it? So the Nambudri communists, are they brahmanas or is Gokul Chandra a brahman? I leave it up to you to answer. It's a rhetorical question. So it's an emergency situation. We're creating, Srila Prabhupada wrote, that we're creating brahmanas from the ranks of the unqualified. So especially if you take people from that atmosphere, or even people who are coming from a good brahmana family in India, there are still some. They can also be victimized by the modern age. I mean, it's amazing that anyone's practicing Krishna consciousness at all, considering all the propaganda which you get from the moment you're born or even before that in the womb, all this totally materialistic propaganda. And if you're not going to be influenced by that, you have to lock yourself away. If you just go out on the street, you're going to be subjected to all kinds of maya. So, as Srila Prabhupada said, don't be surprised if anyone leaves, be surprised if anyone stays. It's not surprised if anyone falls down. So, it is an emergency situation, and we have to go on in the best way we can. This is how we're doing, but we have to be cautious, and we haven't been cautious enough in our movements. But at the same time, over caution will kill the movement. If we say, well, no one can teach, no one's qualified to be a guru, and then someone will come along from the Gauriya Math or someone and say, well, I'm qualified to be a guru. And people say in the book, you have to have a guru. Okay, I'm going there. And then our ISKCON's finished. Better to have someone who's following Srila Prabhupada and teaching in that way then have someone who's floating in the phantasmagoria of Gopi Bhav, who's a Siddha nonsense, Paka nonsense from Radha Kunda or whatever. Cannot we better serve Srila Prabhupada by accepting people, guiding them, initiating them, then just leaving them with all, you have to wait till there's a pure devotee. When's that going to, come back in another lifetime. People aren't going to be very satisfied with it. Or we can have Ritvik Vad, which is a total concoction. And what happens is people, they also think that the leader of the Ritvik party is our guru, at least in India. People, as we know, when we ask them, who's your guru? They don't say Prabhupada, they say Madhu Pandit. And however much Madhu Pandit may say, no, they'll think like that. And the same thing, again going back to my Gauri Amat experiences, there's one, at the present time, he's very old now and doesn't come out at all. But he's prominent in the, you could say the previous generation, because he's very old now. Disciple of one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples. And he would initiate on the order, his guru didn't order him, but he was left between those two. So his guru was a very prominent preacher. He himself preaching throughout his life, following strictly. He would always say throughout his life, I'm simply representing my guru. Before he would initiate, he'd always, every time he'd initiate, he would do an elaborate puja of his own guru. He would tell people, I'm just guiding you to my guru. But everyone thought of him as a Paramahamsa, and I do too. He is actually a very advanced devotee, from what I can see. But still, I'd rather be in Prabhupada's following. There's Srila Prabhupada's preaching is, what he's given is dynamic, powerful, purifying. There is, maybe it's party spirit or, but I feel that it's a very special shakti, or potency is rested in Prabhupada. I would rather direct people to Srila Prabhupada. I'm not, if they feel attracted to go to Gauriya Math, this, that, well, that's up to them. Although a lot of poaching goes on, what we call poaching, and I generally don't recommend so much. If someone asks me, I wouldn't recommend so much to go to Gauriya Math, because they give very easily initiation and with no, in most cases, without any follow-up. And they don't require that you have to, in most cases, they don't require they have to follow anything, hardly. And so anyway, that's another issue altogether. But that, if we're overly cautious, then ISKCON will be finished, actually. Because people will go and take initiation somewhere else. Or they'll go to this concoction, Ritvikism, which is, it's a failure, in as much as they say, well, that will unite everyone, but they're all split up into little groups, the Ritvik Vadis. And people, how they can't get sufficient guidance, because the so-called Ritvikpa, they says, then they want guidance, what should I do? I don't know. They don't take any responsibility. You're on your own. Just read Prabhupada's books, that's all. Prabhupada's your guru, ask Prabhupada. And then they go and pray to Prabhupada, and something comes in their mind, some imagination. And Prabhupada told me to kick you in the face. Someone told me that. Someone told me, I told them something which they didn't like, to destroy Prabhupada's books. They didn't like that. So they went before Prabhupada's murti and prayed to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told that devotee, who subsequently told me, Prabhupada told me to kick you in the face because I told them to destroy Prabhupada's books. So this is what you get when you, this imagination of Prabhupada's my guru. But that's not what Shastra, you have to have someone tell you, this is what you should do. Personal guidance is required. Oh, so many things, and it's late. Oh, so anyway, going on. So, room conversation. Prabhupada, you become guru, but you must be qualified first. Then you become. What is the use of producing some rascal guru, Tamal Krishna? Well, I have studied myself and all of your disciples, and it's a clear fact that we are all conditioned souls. So we cannot be gurus. Maybe someday it will be, maybe possible. And that's how we all thought when Prabhupada was here. We all saw Prabhupada, his stature is millions of miles high, and we're all like ants in comparison. And among the ants, one may be a little bigger than the other, but in comparison to Prabhupada, we're all very small. Then the conversation, Prabhupada says, and in square brackets, it's written, agrees. The transcriber has put their interpretation of Prabhupada saying, They have a direct link with Prabhupada through Tamal Krishna. But not now. Prabhupada, yes, I shall produce some gurus, I shall say who is guru. Now you become acharya, you become authorized, I retire completely. But the training must be complete. Tamal Krishna. The process of purification must be there, no rubber stamp. Prabhupada, you can cheat, but it will not be effective. Just see our Gauri Amat. Everyone wanted to be guru, a small temple and guru. What kind of guru? From this conversation, it's, and from the experience of gurus fallen down in ISKCON, it's presumed by many devotees that everyone who's in ISKCON as a guru is doing so to cheat others. They're just doing to cheat. But I don't feel like that. I see that in most cases they've tried to serve the mission but have been carried away. I don't think that there's this idea that you become a sannyasi just to fill up your bank account. But I don't, there may be cases like that, but I don't see that everyone's like that. So Tamal Krishna accepts that he is a conditioned soul. He studied himself and all of his god brothers. That's interesting that they're accepting Tamal, what Tamal Krishna says here, because generally the Ritvik Vadis, they don't accept anything he says otherwise. Srila Prabhupada wants to produce some gurus. He says, I shall say who is guru. Now you become acharya, you become authorized. I retire completely, but the training must be complete. My next two questions. When was the training complete? Has the training been completed even as we speak? Well, in one sense, the training is never complete because one always thinks oneself a disciple. Srila Prabhupada talks about making the training complete. What exactly Srila Prabhupada meant here, I don't know. What exactly he meant is not clear to me. He was speaking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who probably more than anyone in our movement he'd personally trained. So again, what it means, I'm not exactly sure. I could speculate, and someone else can speculate, but it's not clear. Srila Prabhupada didn't elaborate on what he meant there. Which leaves open the question, well, how do we continue the parampara in this situation? There are various alternatives, like I said. You can say no more gurus until we see someone. Well, who then is going to say who's actually an uttamadhikari, who's authorized to initiate? We have to wait till a real pure devotee comes. Who will say? And Prabhupada said uttamadhikari is one who chants 16 rounds, who follows the principles and preaches. He's always thinking of how to expand the movement. So, it's a difficult situation. What I can deduce from Srila Prabhupada's teachings is that we should, go on strictly following. Should be more strict. Should be good training of those who are coming. Concoctions like Ritvikism, I'm going, cannot work. Because, I mean, there's this whole thing, even if you think Prabhupada must have meant it. Anyway, if you have any affinity to that, just read this Defeat of Ritvikvada by Rochan, if you can read it, because it's highly legalistic. It's not readable. It's not readable because it's legalistic, because the final order, which it replies to, is it takes Prabhupada's words, matches it here against something else, and it's a legalistic style. So the Defeat of Ritvikvada is also in a legalistic style. You want to do like that? Okay. We're going to do like that also, and just completely dismantles it. So it's definitely, Ritvikism is completely bogus. Initiate as a strict follower, that has been going on for centuries in the Ramanuja and Madhva sampradayas, that all the devotees in those sampradayas, they look back to Ramanuja or Madhva and as their acharya, and they also respect their guru who teaches them in the same way. But still, Ramanuja is Ramanuja. Madhva is Madhva. He is the special emissary of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who we all follow. And their own acharyas are also certainly worshipped and respected, but special, or the particular position is there. Of the sampradaya acharyas. So strictly following means in practice and in principle. So yoga nashta, sa eva yang mayatna, what's that? Evang parampara praptam evang raja shio vidhu sakala nirmata yoga nashta. The parampara can become spoiled by two things. One is two main things. One is apasiddhanta, presenting wrong conclusions, and even if one has the right philosophy, then personal interest also. So if one is becoming a guru out of, for the sake of name, fame and glory and money, then you might be speaking the right philosophy, but everything will be spoiled. And even if you're apparently selfless, but you speak the wrong philosophy, then again things get spoiled. And actually, either way you go off, both things will go off in course of time. If the wrong philosophy, it means anyway there's at least subtly some personal interest. And so that will become apparent in course of time. And if you have personal interest, then Krishna won't bless you to speak to understand the right philosophy anyway. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave the actual standard of the guru, and he also gave a working standard. There's a quote there. A person who is liberated, acharya and guru, cannot commit any mistake, but thereof, this is from Srila Prabhupada. But a person who is a from his writings, a person who is a liberated, acharya and guru, cannot commit any mistake, but there are persons who are less qualified or not liberated, but who can still act as guru and acharya by strictly following the disciplic succession. If gurus are not uttamadhikaris, then the sampradaya will deteriorate. So Srila Prabhupada, in one purport he said, we therefore request all the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to become pure devotees so that they can deliver the fallen souls. So those who are complaining about the gurus falling down and not being on the right level and this and that, I say to them, well, Srila Prabhupada told you also, he gave you also the mandate to be a pure devotee. So instead of complaining about others, you be a pure devotee. You do the job properly. If you see there's so many problems, then you be the pure devotee that Srila Prabhupada gave you the training to be, and you show how to do it properly. that challenge is there for all of us. Otherwise, if we say, well, no one's a pure devotee, and then we become like Christianity, in which not being pure is the standard, and no one has to strive for that, or that you just get everything just by the blessings of Jesus. Then if we stipulate that no one's a pure devotee, no one can be a pure devotee, and then already the sampradaya is finished. So that's the real solution to everyone who's complaining, including myself. There's nothing stopping any of us being the pure devotees that Prabhupada wanted us to be, except our own stubbornness to not be. So that's the challenge for all of us. So, generally we don't like to discuss these topics openly because we may be afraid devotees may become discouraged. But if we don't do that, and we just devotees, they think, well, anyone who's called a guru, they must be a pure devotee and on the highest level. And all you have to do is worship their picture, and then sometimes you see them and they smile at you, and that's it. And it creates a sahajya type of atmosphere in which real understanding of devotional service and the real endeavor to be Krishna conscious doesn't take place. We take non-reality to be real. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? There may be millions of questions. Probably all the question is, when's this guy going to stop speaking so we can take prasadam? We're already way over time. You're all polite enough not to heckle. Yeah, okay. All right. What's your question?
Can you use this in a relation of having gurus who are not uttamadhikaris or who are not on a liberated platform? Can we use the example of medicine? Because medicine can be administered, can be given by, even your friend. But if it is proper medicine, if it is medicine which really helps you, then...
Yeah, that's an example. Example of medicine, if someone who's not qualified as a doctor knows the right medicine for a disease, then it has the same effect as if it's given by a qualified doctor. Of course, the problem is that sometimes people think they know, but they don't know. So one should have proper training and then be a doctor. But if something simple, like you have a cold and someone says, it takes some hot ginger tea. But if you have a severe heart problem, I'd recommend you go to cardiologist. If your friend says, well, just, take some Haldi or something, that might not work. So the example is valid up to a point. But yeah, if one has been well trained, then he should be able to just like you'll find to be a nurse, you have to have, you may not be fully qualified as a doctor, but by being around doctors, and they know what, and many times the doctors, although they're not supposed to, they tell the nurses to do things which the doctors should do, because the nurses have seen it done so many times, and they can also do some things. So I don't know actually how far they're qualified, giving stitches. And
pharmacologist who is studying the medicine, he also knows, doctor doesn't give you directly.
The doctor tells you to go to the pharmacologist, and the pharmacologist knows what medicine is for what disease. He's not a doctor. So that example is there to some extent. Yeah. Advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent on the attitude of the follower. That's for me is the guiding sutra of my life. Srila Prabhupada wrote that in the preface to the Nectar of Instruction. Yeah. Yeah. I'll read it again. A person who is a liberated acharya and guru cannot commit any mistake, but there are persons who are less qualified or not liberated, but can still act as guru and acharya by strictly following the disciplic succession. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that, yeah, that's another important point, that advancement is also much dependent on the disciple's following. That they, yeah. Well, that's another quotation, similar one from the in the Nectar Instruction. Srila Prabhupada says that one may take initiation from a Madhyama Adhikari or a Kanishtha Adhikari, but that that's why I had you write it out. They cannot advance so satisfactorily under the insufficient guidance. And that may apply, especially as you get to the higher stages, because in basic principles, Madhyama Adhikari is quite sufficient to guide you to don't eat meat, don't drink wine, rise early in the morning, chant, you're having problems with your mind, okay, chant more. That's going on. It may be at the higher levels that when you're actually get beyond anartha nivritti and you're coming up to nishta, ruchi, bhav. But then at that stage when one actually comes to the level of jata ruchi, when taste is awakened, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said at that stage the duty of the guru is not so much to guide as just to give some suggestion. That you're really, that you're already there, so to speak, and still the guru is there, but at that level, the guru's function is somewhat different. This what is that? Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitta. Shri Guruji, what is it? Exactly, which are the words? They Vishra Chagavar Thakur, he glosses that as that the guru gives instructions on how to serve the gopis in Krishna Lila. So that can be understood at various levels. Our guru tells us, don't eat meat, don't drink wine, rise early chanting Hare Krishna. But ultimately, the guru is to teach us that madhurya ujvala premardhyashi rupanoga bhaktida. That's ultimately what we're going to at that level. But we're not there. Srila Prabhupada said, when you get to that stage, then you'll see everything will be revealed. So there are many points, isn't it? One, it's strictly following. It's not just that the guru and the disciple should be on the same level in strictly following, but one important function of the guru, which is mentioned in Shastra, he should be able to dispel the doubts of the disciple. So he should have studied deeply Shastra. That's Shabde Pareta Nishnatam Brahmanyupashama Shrayam. These are the two qualifications for guru given in Shastra. Should be immersed in Vedic sound and should have completely taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the Parampara system. Brahmanya Upa, the word is given Upa, but it means taking shelter by the Parampara system. So completely immersed in Vedic sound means not just rote learning, but one should have discussed, contemplated, realization should be there also. So there are many points. Guru Tattva is a very deep topic. It's a difficult one to understand because one is to see the Guru as good as God. Whereas he's not God. So it's to see a jiva as good as God, it's a very big topic. Oh, in that regard, someone's given quotation here. There is Saraswati Thakur writing in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in regard to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There is an internally impassable line. Actually, this might have been, probably is written by Nishikant Sanyal, not directly Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There is an internally impassable line of demarcation between the Savior and the saved. Those who are really saved can alone know this. Thakur Bhaktivinoda belongs to the category of the spiritual world teachers who eternally occupy the superior position. So what does that mean? Does this mean that only Nitya Siddhas are empowered to save, since those who are themselves saved can never pass the line of demarcation to be included among saviors? Impassable line of demarcation, that is how a disciple will always think about his guru. But in another sense, Jivesu Rupoi Krishna Nitya Das. Krishna is in one category and everyone else is in another category. So the guru instructs others so that they can come to the level of pure devotional service. There is Shakti Tattva. There are devotees who are Shakti Tattva, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kamala Manjari. There are other gurus who act as representatives of those. But we're all servants of Krishna. My observation is that, one observation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he spoke from a very high level, come up to this level. With Srila Prabhupada, he was more like taking our hand and saying, come with me, it's easy. So yes, there is an impassable line of demarcation, in the one sense, but in another sense, in the spiritual world, we're all there together serving Krishna. And there also, there are gradations, there's hierarchy. But it doesn't mean that those who are disciples will never be pure devotees. That's a very wrong interpretation. Rather, the very meaning of a guru is one who teaches you, and guides you so you can come up to that level. So to think that Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee, no one else can be a pure devotee. That's not what Prabhupada taught. He wanted us to be pure devotees. We shouldn't imitate it. There's also a question here somewhere. Oh, here's that quote, I'll read it. When a neophyte devotee is actually initiated and engaged in devotional service by the orders of the spiritual master, he should be accepted immediately as a bona fide Vaishnava and obeisances should be offered unto him. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very strictly engaged in the service of the Lord and strictly following all the regulated principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds on japa beads and always thinking of how to expand the Krishna conscious movement. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an Uttama Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So Srila Prabhupada said, out of many neophyte devotees, one may be strictly following to that level. So that qualifies that statement about strictly following. It may not be everyone who's qualified. There should be a standard of strictness in which is not so commonly attained. So what were they saying about Nitya Siddhas, Shakti Tattva? Oh, there's a question. I can't find it now, but someone had asked a question. Someone says that Well, a Nitya Siddha Uttamadhikari, they can initiate, but what about a Sadhana Siddha Uttamadhikari? Are they qualified to initiate also? Well, I would say you better get a guru to teach you properly, because such questions show you know what you're talking about. Even to ask such a question means that you haven't understood some basic principles. As Srila Prabhupada often said, Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, Kripa Siddha, they're all on the same level. They're all, actually in one sense, everyone's Nitya Siddha. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadha, Kabunai, Shavana, Adi, Shuddha, Chitta, Kari, Erudoi. Our Nitya Siddhadva, or our eternal position of pure devotional service, is temporarily covered. It is to be uncovered. That's one perspective of it. And here's a really interesting question. Interesting for its... well, you'll find out. A bona fide Diksha Guru is a conveyor of transcendental sound which is self-evident and doesn't need corroboration by other senses. Okay? You all understood that? I know what it means. Transcendental sound is self-evident and doesn't need corroboration by other senses. What does that mean? It's not a quote from Shastra, not at least not from anything that I've heard or read in all these years. Ordinary sounds need to be verified by prior experience of other senses by means of smell, taste, vision, and touch. What does that mean? Ordinary sounds need to be verified by prior experience of others. What does that mean? If you hear the sound cow, you have to see a cow in advance to know what it is. Maybe that's what it means. And smell a cow, taste a cow. I don't taste a cow. When transcendental sound is received from a pure devotee, it has the effect of purification of all the senses, and one experiences Krishna directly through all five senses simply listening to transcendental sound from the lips of a pure devotee, since transcendental sound is self-evident. I think it's coming from Narayan Maharaj. From the Babaji's. It sounds like Babaji philosophy. It's not anything we learned from Srila Prabhupada. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by means of such pure chanting, made devotees wherever he went, and he even made the animals of Jharkhand forest to chant and dance. Similarly, Rasikananda Dev, by his pure chanting, even initiated a rogue elephant. Someone read my book there, Rasikananda. I use the term rogue elephant. Whether the transmitted sound is self-evident and hence transcendental or not can be considered a litmus test for determining whether the chanter is a pure devotee as good as God. Well, it's not that everyone who heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's chanting immediately became pure devotee. The Mayavadis of Varanasi, they didn't. So what happened? Did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu get contaminated by their Mayavad and therefore his chanting wasn't so potent? What? The premise on which these questions are based are flawed. There's also the receptivity of the recipient. Some people don't want to hear. Most people who heard Srila Prabhupada's chanting didn't take to pure devotional service. Does that mean that his chanting wasn't transcendental? They didn't jump up and down in ecstasy. Does that mean his chanting wasn't transcendental? This idea that actual transcendental sound immediately transforms you into ecstasy, and anyone who doesn't chant like that, that others become immediately mad in love of Krishna, they're not actually conveying anything transcendental. This idea is a sahajya idea. So like I say, I think it's coming from the Babaji Sampradaya via probably Narayan Maharaj. Well, that's a speculation on my part, but it's not anything that we receive from Shastra or Prabhupada. So. If you come, I'll teach you all these things. I will teach you. I will teach you what is the proper understanding. I'm accepting disciples. I have the duty to teach you. I will teach you what is the truth, how you can attain it. I have the boldness to say so, because I heard from Prabhupada, I'm teaching the same thing. If I'm not, then I would be cheating. As much as I teach what I heard from Prabhupada, then that is, then you get the result that you can judge for yourself. Otherwise you can go to some Babaji and have him touch you and you can have some apparent ecstasy. You told me one devotee came to Radha Kund, some Babaji saw him and initiated him on the spot without knowing who he is, what his background is. He went to the other side of Radha Kund and met another Babaji who also initiated him on the spot. Two initiations in half an hour. Both completely bogus. Oh, the first one told him his Siddha Swarup is such and such. And the next one told him his Siddha Swarup is something else. And then he went back to Europe and started smoking or whatever. Quite likely, as in many of these cases. Smoking a cigarette. Hey, you're supposed to be a Vaishnava. Why are you smoking a cigarette? Well, I'm a gopi in Vrindavan, so what does it matter? Sahajya. It's much better to be initiated for receiving knowledge. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat. To receive proper knowledge in parampara, then to go to these useless sahajya, worse than useless sahajya cheaters. But the gurus and ISKCON, they should follow strictly also. That's required. Not following strictly has created disaster. It doesn't have to. So, you all please protect me. Having taken this position that I'm not fit for, you have to learn from me and you also have to protect me. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. That's all for now. Enough to digest for one morning. Hare Krishna. These are very delicate topics, which is probably why they're not much openly discussed within our movement. But if they're not openly discussed, then many devotees may unthinkingly presume their devotees to be on the topmost platform of devotional service, even though they haven't tried to understand from Shastra what it means to be on the topmost platform of devotional service, or what the symptoms of such a devotee on the topmost platform are. So that will foster some kind of sentimentalism or fanaticism and sectarianism. My guru is better than yours. My guru is really the topmost because Prabhupada said he's an intimate associate, or he's the topmost because he's always talking about the gopis, or he's the topmost because he follows Chaturmasya or something. They're always trying to find something to assure themselves that they're on the best platform, without properly understanding Shastric descriptions, which will always lead to disaster. There may be others who are devotees who are thoughtful, but they don't really want to think too much, because they think, well, no one else is talking about this, and everyone presumes my guru, all the gurus, to be topmost, and if I think in another way I might be offensive, and in this way they harbor doubts, even though externally they don't show that, which inhibit their proper advancement in devotional service. Devotional service works on the platform of faith in Guru. But that faith, everything has to be on a realistic basis, both the fanatic or sentimentalist who doesn't think at all about philosophy or doesn't think about it sufficiently and or accepts his Guru as topmost. He's not properly situated. And one who is doubting, he's also not properly situated because the gurus have not properly advised him. The gurus are not doing their jobs properly of teaching the disciple on the basis of reality. Now, another syndrome which I alluded to is that even if devotees are not situated on the topmost platform, but nevertheless take up the service of Guru and repeatedly tell their disciples, I'm not on the highest platform. If they are strictly following, then without personal motivation, then the potency of the parampara will come through. And the disciples will ascribe that to their Guru, which is true, because he's faithfully represented the parampara, but they'll tend to think of that devotee as a topmost devotee, even though he tells them he's not. I was giving that example of that Gauriyamat Guru who always worships his Guru and always tells his disciples, actually it's my Guru's mercy, you're being delivered. But every Guru will, no Guru will think, I am great. He will always think my Guru is great. But in some cases, the Guru is doing that service like a monitor Guru, Srila Prabhupada said. But still, in one sense, the disciples, they have to consider him, or they naturally tend to consider him as being very great because he is delivering them to them the message of the parampara by which they're experiencing the bliss of Krishna consciousness, of becoming free from material conditioning. So it's not that those who are not on the topmost platform cannot substantially help devotees who are very neophyte. So are they topmost or not? Well, in one sense, yes. In another sense, no. They can deliver the topmost process to the extent that the devotees in a less advanced position can take it. It doesn't require an Einstein to explain elementary physics to young students. Maybe the students will go on to become at the level of Einstein. Maybe they won't. Maybe in this lifetime they'll get up to the level of the physics professor or the physics teacher in the elementary school. The teacher in the elementary school may advise that if for higher teachings, now you've competently studied under me, now for higher teachings you should go on. That may be there also. There are many, many points to be considered. All these points should be considered in a cool-headed way, in the mode of goodness, which understandably has become difficult due to so many discrepancies within our movement. Basically, we should all be on the platform of reality. But what is the platform of reality? That ultimately Krishna has to say. Krishna may be very pleased with someone who's trying to serve his mission by guiding, instructing, and initiating others with the intent to try and help them, even if that devotee is not on the topmost platform. It might seem to be cheating for him to accept such honor, respect, and facilities, worship of others, but that could be said of any jiva. But that is authorized that is accepted. If the guru, whether he's still suffering from material conditioning or not, he has to offer that up. He doesn't think it's meant for me.